This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded December 28th, 2010. Episode 23, The Innovation Speculation.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gammel from Chris Gammel's Analog Life.
Hey, Chris. Happy holidays and all that jazz.
Yeah, same to you, Dave. Did the Flying Spaghetti Monster bring you any presents under the...
Yes, indeed. I got the chair for the lab I was after.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Finally, yeah, I can sit there and... although I haven't used it in its full glory yet. I haven't actually shot a blog out there yet, so...
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but it's a nice... It's like a bar stool. It's not like the old five-legged lab chair, but it's like a hydraulic bar stool kind of thing. It's one of those, you know, that you have at your home bar or whatever, but it is hydraulic, and it's nice, and it swings around, and...
You know, I got one. I got one. It wasn't right. I wasn't specific enough to my family, I think.
Oh,
so.
No.
Yeah, it happened.
Tragic. So, what's going to happen? You're going to get a Santa refund there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
or
I think,
a Santa exchange?
Santa's giving me cash. I think so.
All right. Awesome.
I'm sure that's happened to many other people out there. The thanks. Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah. I mean, it was nice. It was nice of them. I'm always appreciative of getting stuff. So,
of course.
But I did get my nerdy magnification goggles and a Dremel. I got a wired Dremel. I forgot to talk about.
Dremels
that.
Are great. Yes, I've got my Dremel. I don't use it much, but it's one of those tools that
when you need it, you need it.
Yeah. That, you know, 40,000 RPM little grindy bit to you know, cut a hole in a case or do something weird or
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so sure. I'm glad I got that, and that'll help me with a lot of stuff, I think. So,
yeah, Dremel's awesome.
That's nice though. Yeah,
but chair. These bar stools are good, but you don't really have a high bench, do you? If I remember your photo, you've got more of a desk kind of.
Yeah, it's a table actually. It's like a '50s Formica table, which is nice for like burn marks. But it's just kind of makeshift. So whatever, it works.
Right. I sort of cleared my bench over the holidays. I cleared one of them. I've got now an anti-static mat that goes over the whole thing. So, yeah. And like I was lazy. I didn't actually move the instruments off the desk. I moved the soldering and irons off, but everything else I sort of lifted up
around
and slid the thing under, and I was just too lazy.
Yeah. Have you been having static problems, or is this something you've been meaning to do?
No, it's just a work mat. It's just a
Okay.
I got the thing and it just it's just one of those blue protective work mats, and they're solder proof and they're all sorts of and they're an anti-static coating, and they're just designed so that you don't burn your wooden desk or
where you clip in with a static wrist guard.
It doesn't have a stud for that. No, you can put a stud in it, but it's actually got a conductive underneath it. It's like got a conductive foam underneath the whole thing, which I measured to be about 100K or something like that for, I don't know, a centimeter distance or something like that. And it's got a nice blue hardware in top on it. It's great.
Oh, cool.
So, but I was too lazy to move everything off it, so I just sort of swept and lifted up, quick shove under.
Yep.
Oh, boy. I'm lazy.
Well, we talked about that last week, didn't we?
Well, exactly. But, well, the thing is, I haven't got enough... That's when I realized I didn't have enough room in there.
Is that when you made that video?
That's when I made the video, If you haven't seen, I got a video in my study here, which I'm sitting next to. You can see it in the video. I built some new cupboards, so that's great. And they're not finished yet. I've still got to put everything back. So the rest of the house is scattered with all my junk is scattered around the rest of the house. So I have to put it back in the cupboard or throw it out. Ooh-hoo. I hate throwing stuff out.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with an old lab chair?
Auction it off online. I mean, maybe
auction off online, right? Dave's done 100 and
EEV blog contest, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
Or break it into pieces. You could break it into pieces and ship it to people. I don't know what the hell they'd want with it, but you never know. You could find out.
Write in, please, if you got an idea.
Yeah.
Do you want my old lab chair with the one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe turn someone will turn it into a piece of like art or something.
Right. Yeah. I'd be happy if they just blew it up. No, yeah. It's a good chair. It's a really good chair, but yeah, busted leg. Tried to fix it many times. I didn't post the photo that I promised to post of the busted leg. Chair leg. No. Ah, well.
Maybe there's one last chance. One last chance.
Yeah, before it gets turfed. It's still sitting out there, so.
Well, speaking of videos of building stuff, how we get into the workbench of the week, because we had an impressive one to start out this week.
Yes, we do. Who was that? I can't remember. I haven't gone through the list, as usual.
It's Adam C. I'm not going to try and pronounce his last name, because I will butcher that. But he runs OneCircuit.com, which is a vintage video game.
That's right.
Shop, basically, and he fixes up old ones, and he also helps to mod them and, I believe, clone them.
Yep.
So, yeah, pretty cool.
He's reverse engineering some old gaming board or something like that. Wants to reverse engineer it completely.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And good he luck. Had a great video. He was he was going to build a bench for his workshop, a four-station bench, which is pretty huge. And he
for,
goes
for
to
a home lab. This is his home lab, right?
Well, I think it's quasi. I mean, I get the impression it's professional too. So,
well, he does actually. He says he does actually work from home. So,
right. So,
yeah,
professional, but in the home, right? Yeah. Yeah. Definitely taking up a lot of space in the home. So that's and it's yeah, and so he built it from scratch in the video, and he goes through all the different things he's talking about, like considerations for where to put equipment, and you know, making sure there's cabling room in the back. And he goes through the whole thing. It's a really, really great video. And he's upping the ante for Workbench of the Week because this is the first video. I mean, we're only bound to see more. I mean, we love those 1960s photographs, right? I mean, that's so 1960s, right? But
well, 1800s, isn't it?
Well, I guess, yeah, further back if you want. I mean, color. Kodachrome was 60s,
color.
Right? Yeah.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Newfangled like, color stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. although we did get a black and white picture we'll talk about a little bit later too.
Yes, we did.
But yeah, definitely check out the video. We'll embed it in the Amp Hour webpage and you can go click it there or just click right through to YouTube. So
yep.
Very impressive, Adam. We appreciate you sending it in.
Yeah, thank you very much, Adam. It's awesome. It goes for about 10 minutes or something like that. He takes us on a tour and shows it before when he's and then after it's fully assembled and all the storage he's got as well, which is very impressive.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, that would that lab would be sought after by anyone in any lab in any company, let alone your own home, you know, in terms of space and storage and things like that. It's great.
Yeah, and as a quick aside, you asked me before the show about holidays in the U.S.
Yes, I want to know that. What do you got? Because here, Christmas is the big holiday of the year. I mean, everyone stops work on Christmas Eve, so you get the you get the 24th off. Most people take the 24th off generally and don't go back until sometime in the the 5th of January or something like that. So
right.
Yeah, we pretty much shut down. Most commercial businesses. So
I think that's a lot of industry too, at least in the U.S. But I'm working this week. I'm working 3 days out of the week, and then I'll get off for New Year's. But this week, I'm actually today. It just worked out that I was moving cubes, and I wanted to tell people
cubes.
About
cubes.
Sorry.
I always just get visions of the Dilbert cube farm. Oh, yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Some of us have to have cubes still. Anyways, they told us we could like pick how to set them up. And
awesome.
And so basically you give engineers a day to try and optimize a constrained problem like a 10x10 foot cube and where to put stuff. And honestly, it turned into mayhem.
Yes, I can imagine.
You're talking about Adam's bench reminded me of that. Oh man, it was just like, oh, but what if we did this and that? Oh, it was just all over the place.
Oh dearity. That reminds my company at the moment, we moved into a new building. It was quite some time ago. Oh, God, it was 2 years ago now or something, I believe. Anyway, it's a rented building. We don't actually own it. We lease it. We release the whole build. They build it specifically to our requirements and everything. We designed it and all that sort of stuff. But, technically, we don't own it, so we're leasing it. And we're not allowed to put up anything on the walls in our cubicles. It's unbelievable. The cubicle, like, I put up calendars and all sorts of things, stuck them to the wall. I came in one morning, there's a post-it note there from the cubicle Nazi who goes around inspecting all these things.
Really?
And I got a note saying, please remove, they didn't say, please remove your calendars from the wall. They actually physically removed the calendars from the wall and chucked them on my desk and left a note saying, please don't put things on the walls. It marks the walls, and please only use the designated.
I guess it could have been worse. They could have just left a box of ash. Burned them on the spot, you know?
Yep. But. Oh, the cubicle Nazis. Anyway, that's insane when you go to that sort of level. But our cubicles are very, very spacious.
That's nice.
Yeah, and we've got a big glass whiteboard, which is like 2.5 meters long or something like that. Huge.
That's
glass
awesome.
Whiteboard behind us.
I love whiteboards. If people don't have whiteboards in their labs or houses,
you got to
get one.
Yep.
I mean, you have that little one you use in your show, but that's probably just for convenience, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I don't have room out in the EEV blog lab for a whiteboard. So I do a lot of stuff on post-it notes and little notebooks and stuff like that.
Nothing
beats a whiteboard. Mine's not actually a whiteboard. As I said, it's actually glass because that actually works better than a as good as a whiteboard. Any glass surface, you can just go up to your window. I know people in their company, they just walk up to the window or the glass window inside a meeting room or something like that, and they write everything on the glass, and then they just rub it off. And so, glass works really well.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, so if you've got a glass cubicle, just start writing stuff all over the glass walls.
Don't pick your nose because you're in a glass cubicle.
Right. Right. Oh, goodness. I just wanted to describe my work cubicle a bit more. I've got, each person has 4 gigabit Ethernet cable ports in their cubicle.
Oh my.
Don't ask me why, but there are 4. So you can imagine the amount of Ethernet cable spread throughout this building. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And we've all got like 12 PowerPoints or something like that, which is a phenomenal amount for a regular cubicle. It's just a huge amount of PowerPoints.
Yeah.
So
that's very good.
It's awesome. So very happy.
So why did you make fun of me for saying cube? If you have a cube too.
Oh, I just like making. I just find cubicles totally amusing, even though I've got one.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I'm like, Dave's got this spacious office or something. No, have a cube too.
No,
so.
I don't think I've ever had an office.
I wouldn't expect one as an engineer.
Right. Well, no. unless you count the actual lab, I've had. I guess you could count an entire lab as your office. So I've had that where I've had a desk in the corner of the lab, and the lab is the whole room, you know, it's the whole huge room. I've had that. So I guess you could say I've had a huge lab/office, something like that. But not an actual, you know, manager's office or something like that.
Right, right, right. You got to move up for that.
Yeah,
that's the gift.
Yeah, she's got to kiss some more ass to. And as you can probably imagine, I don't kiss ass. Never have, never will. So, yeah, I will never aspire to the rank of manager, I don't think. It's not going to happen.
Well, how about this next one? So, we also have another workbench of the week from Lieven Blonker from Ghent in Belgium. So, he sent us a great email. Just tons of... Basically, he sent us an email. He took a picture of him and his kid who... we're working at their workbench. I think he said his son, Steph, is 7 years old. And so they're both in the... just Steph's in the photo. But great picture of the bench, too. He's got a 201 electronics kit. Have you ever used those?
I've done a whole blog on those.
You have? I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I've waved mine around on the video. Yeah, absolutely.
Very nice. I love those things.
Yep.
And Rigol scope, you said. Analog multimeter. Very nice, very nice.
Yep, I see that, and there's his boy in the photo there.
Yeah, so it's great, and they even show a couple of their projects too. So very, very awesome. I think one was for a thermostat.
Yeah,
if I am right. Yes.
And that looks like an old Tandy / Micronta analog multimeter right up there. Well, the box for it, right up there next to the scope. Yeah. It is. I just zoomed in. It's a Micronta.
Yeah.
18. I think that might be identical to the one I've shown on my blog. So the Tandy 200-in-1 kit plus the Micronta multimeter. That was my first ever multimeter.
Awesome.
Yeah. Fantastic. So that really parallels my childhood, for sure.
That's awesome.
I can't believe they still got the original box for that. Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. I'm surprised,
I'm reminiscing. Brings a tear to the eye.
Yeah. You know, I never had a 201. I got to play with friends, 201s.
Right.
But one of my friends brought in the book that he had recently about it. And it's kind of crazy just like how they don't really explain a lot about it. You know, like they tell you what to do, but they don't exactly explain the theory behind it just because it's about getting it done and you know, kind of.
It actually progresses through the book. First, the first, like, quarter of the book, they actually tell you to just put the wire here from A to B and that kind of stuff. And then they give you the diagram of how to wire it up. And as you say, they don't explain it. But then further on, they actually start, then they stop doing that and they give you a circuit diagram instead of a photo of where to put the wires.
So yeah, then you've got to start. This might have been the one that my friend had. So that could be it. Yep. So, I mean, there's tons of them out there if people haven't seen them. So,
yeah. I started out with the 50-in-1. It was that was the first one. The first one wasn't the 200-in-1. It was the Tandy 50-in-1. Was the it might have even been 30-in-1. But anyway, I had the 50-in-1. Then I graduated to the 150-in-1, and then I got the monster, the 200-in-1. And I still have the 200-in-1. The others I sadly don't have anymore. So,
yeah.
Ah, well. Yeah. Spent many a year wiring those things up. Anyway, thank you very much for the workbench of the week photo.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And two more. Two more.
God.
Yeah, I know. Next. People are doing great about this. So next is Bob from ambientsensors.com. And he took a picture and I'm just going to shoot straight. He has some cool stuff on his bench, but the coolest thing, I follow him on Twitter too, and his Twitter username is WA7IUT. I believe that's a call sign for
a call sign. For hand. Sounds like a cool sign.
But if you look at his page, he has an HP 300A audio oscillator from back in the day, and it's signed by both Bill Hewitt and Dave Packard. Have you seen a picture of that?
Yeah, how did he get that?
He used to work there.
I guess. So he just walked into their office. Can you sign this, please?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, maybe when he's leaving or something. But that's awesome. Yeah.
I can't see the signatures on it. I'm zooming in now.
Yeah.
And
it might be on the top, but he has a close-up shot of it. So, you know, I actually couldn't see the picture yesterday, so this is the first time I've seen it,
too.
Oh,
yes, I see it. Yeah, there it is. Bill Hewitt. Yeah. William
people have others sign weird. I mean, this isn't that weird, but some people sign weird things, you know, like
I know.
And it's such a like an interesting like human characteristic too, you know, like why not a thumbprint? Why not, you know, like it's like you know, it's interesting how that. I'm sure there's like books about it out there, but you know, why not other stuff? But
well, see, I don't understand the whole signing thing. You know, like you're at a book, you know, you might see a book signing and people are signed up, you know, to sign a book or a CD or something like that. And they'll line up for hours to get the person's signature and they just get the signature on the thing. Why not? It wouldn't be
Went
much
message,
cooler
right?
to actually get a photo with them.
Yeah, well,
I think that would be much better. I'd rather have, if I met someone who I, you know, famous and, you know, I was a big fan of them, I'd want a photo with them, not their signature. That's
pretty well, that could be from back in the day when photos weren't, I mean, weren't as common. I mean, today, of course, right? But back in the day, maybe there's just some way to remember that you met them, you know?
Interesting. But yeah, considering everyone, I think that's starting because everyone has a camera on their phone now.
Right,
so,
right, exactly.
You know, but still the signature thing still prevails. So I just don't get it. I don't see the value.
Well, I'm sure this was signed a long time ago too.
Right. Yeah. But that is awesome to get that signed by Bill and Dave. That's fantastic. Anyway,
so
Andy's got his dog in the shot too.
Oh
extra
yeah,
bonus
that's true.
Points for the
that's right
for the dog
bonus
and
points for,
and Bob's
and he
in,
was
the shot
in the shot
there. He's smiling.
Yeah. Yep.
He's got his circuit board on the screen there, and excellent.
Very very nice pictures all around.
Thank you very much, Bob. And you one said last, we had another one.
One last one. One last one. So this is from Kevin, right? Kevin, yes, Kevin Smith. And he showed us pictures of his compact lab, but I think you he was inspired by you to clean up his lab a little bit, and right. He has a second set of pictures we'll post too of the cleaned up lab, and he's got a really cool display, like a hanging display. So I like that.
Yeah, it's like a flat screen, which is up on the top level of the shelf, and then he's got like a keyboard right. angled hanging down from that, which is really quite neat.
Yeah, very very good use of space.
Yep.
So, oh man, so many great benches.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys, for sending all those in. We won't go into detail analyzing each one as we usually do, but
yeah. Must go on to other stuff, other things. Yep. Onward and upward.
Awesome. I was going to talk about something, but I forget because I got carried away on the workbench of the week. I should have written it down. I should like take notes as we're actually doing this.
Hmm. That's a good idea.
Anyway, you wanted to talk about Leo Laporte.
Not yet. I wanted to mention the thing about you.
Okay. Oh, the
units of annoyance.
Yeah, let's talk about me. I love talking about me.
So the little backstory for people here, Jerry Ellsworth was on Twitter the other day, and she was talking about units
here
of
annoyance.
Oh, I had asked her why her first video... Damn. Let me back up one more step. So Adafruit sponsored Jerry to do electronics videos A through Z. And the first one she was doing was Ampere, and she did these crazy little cutout photos of, you know, her acting out with Ampere. And I'm not sure why she decided to go that route.
It was
route,
just
but
fun. I thought it was
cool.
It was
very fun. So I asked her why she didn't mention the amp hour. I mean, A, right? And so she said she forgot, but she'll try and get Dave in for EEV blog.
Excellent. And
E is,
kiddies, E is for EEV blog, you know, like in a play school style.
Yeah,
exactly. Is it play
school
or is it Sesame Street where they do the letters? You know, A is for...
Apple, yeah.
Right.
I don't know if it's... I think she's just choosing one. I don't think it's... I guess it would be the same. I mean, it's not like the exact style of Sesame Street, but yeah. A is for Ampere, you know, E is for EEV blog.
Well, E is for so many things, I guess. So
right, E could stand for voltage,
EEV
right?
EEV blog, I'd be very impressed if she picked E is for EEV blog.
I don't know if she'll pick that one, buddy, but...
Right. Okay, but maybe she'll add a joke in at the end or something like that.
Yeah. She did mention that she was going to mention something about the units of annoyance, the Jones.
The Jones.
So we were talking about this on Twitter, and so Mike Hurd of Uptown Maker picked up on it, and he actually wrote a post about it, and he actually drafted a proposal for SI units for bitching, and and so he goes through the entire calculation. It's very, very well thought out, and basically, it's awesome.
Well, let's go through the formula, shall we? Jones equals the number of complaints about a topic times sum of levels of annoyance caused by said complaints weighed by exposure frequency to causative events in seconds between exposure times the number of people likely to be exposed to your ranting. So I've got to actually think about that one.
Yeah. Well, no, go to the example. That's good. So,
right,
so
okay.
he was talking about ORCAD because he was pissed with ORCAD, and I think that's what this post is really about. I mean, aside from Dave, obviously. He said, with ORCAD, right. There are five things that cause him pain every day, three level 2 issues, and one level 6 issue, profanity, audible, not comprehensible to workers in adjacent cubes. So he ends up adding them all up. He said... Oh, man, this is a horrible formula. Maybe it's good formula. It's horrible to read on air.
Well, it's pretty simple. It's only got three terms, and they're all multiplied, but the terms themselves are complex.
Yeah, a little arbitrary, but still.
Yeah.
but it's basically the frequency times the severity times how many people hear it.
Right.
So he said, in his case, it's about 5 times 0.067 times 4. 4 people, I'm guessing, and that's 1.34
right,
Jones.
Watch his block, yeah. And that's a Jones rating of 1.34. Is it a rating? No, it's a
He said it's a unit, and I saw someone else say it's not a unit. It would be a quantity that is then used for other things or something like that.
Right, yes, you're right. I don't think it's a unit per se. Yeah, I think it's more of a rating. I like to think of it anyway. So anyway,
we're 25 minutes into the show. Hopefully no one has two Joneses of annoyance right now.
I think so. We talked about is workbench of the week and annoying things.
Yeah. Oh, but
I built my entire blog on bitching about stuff, and for some reason people like it, so I keep doing it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, well, I do like to speak up and complain a lot. That's my natural
the squeakiest of the wheels.
The squeakiest wheel. Yes, I am the squeakiest wheel. That'd be a great t-shirt. I could have like a wheel I am the squeakiest wheel.
That would be a great t-shirt. You're right. I bet we can get some people to order that.
Yeah, all right.
You can just design that, right? Throw it to
absolutely. Draw it. I'll hand draw it, and I'll... Because it's better if you hand draw it. If you steal a photo off Google or something that's not nearly as cool as drawing your own one.
Well,
anyway,
that's great.
That's great. There you go. We have new unit/rating, the Jones.
Yes, and thanks to Mike and Jerry. That was a very fun discourse about
that's brilliant. All right, we're going to have to start using that in some way.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Going to have fun with that.
Yeah.
I'm not about to stop anytime soon, by the way, ranting and raving about stuff, because I think people would probably stop watching. I think half the people just like to see me bitch about something, and they get quite upset if I don't bitch about something. Yeah, I get hate mail. Why didn't you,
when you
bitch about
apart.
That aspect or that aspect? And, oh, God. I don't go far enough, obviously. Some people, when I did the DigiKey blog, and people think, oh, no, I've gone too far. I've bitched about something before I have all the facts. And then, God, then people bitch. I don't complain. People bitch about me not bitching enough. Oh, go figure. People? I don't know.
I have my own bit of bitching to do this week if you want to hear some of mine.
Rant time.
So, basically, have you seen the EDN Top 100? Do you read that stuff ever?
I get it occasionally, and I have looked at it, and yeah, go for it. Bitch away, because I agree.
Basically, if people don't know this, it's a listing. And usually, it's like the top products of the year. And there are these, the things they're highlighting aren't bad things. They're actually very cool things. But then you go to their website and you see, 100 different things. There are different categories like test equipment and new analog chips, new digital chips, new micros, just everything you'd expect to see from EDN. And then you click through and you're like, okay, I want to look at the latest micro, and it's, some kind of ARM processor with all these different peripherals. And then you go to the pages clicking through to, and it reads like a press release. It says it's been written by one of their staff writers, but it looks like it could have been written by the PR person from the company that it's for. And it's like, what kind of value is that to people if you're just going to be a bunch of corporate shills that, oh, well, this is a great new product because we needed to write about something.
That's what they do. They just paraphrase marketing. Marketing. What's the word? Marketing releases.
Crap.
marketing bullshit press releases. That's all they do, is they paraphrase those. And I've seen companies do it for my company's products. They paraphrase what we say. We feed them all this marketing stuff, and they go off and spin it even further. And or they just flat out copy it, really.
Right.
So it depends on how much work they want to do.
And I think that's what it is. I think it's like they're on such deadlines. I mean, I don't want to defend them because it's ridiculous. If you're publishing this stuff, and then you're passing it off as your own, and you're expecting people to buy it, it's like, come on, guys. Like, is there any truth to this? Has anyone actually tested this in a third party manner, or are we just taking them on their word that these specs are? It's ridiculous. So I don't know. This kind of I read it and I look forward to it. I want to read this stuff. I want to hear about cool products because it's pretty hard to hear about good products. I mean, we have like forums, we have product reviews from like video blogs and regular blogs, right? Like I've written part reviews before, but have people actually tried this stuff? Is EDN trying this stuff? Is EE Times trying this stuff?
That's not their business. Their business is just reporting stuff.
Right.
And there's nothing new here. magazines like EDN and ones like that, they've been doing that forever, really, as long as I can remember, as long as I've been reading, what they've done. They've done, especially these free magazines that you get, you know, these industry-specific free ones that, which is quite novel here in Australia, but overseas, I guess, they're a dime a dozen. But yeah, that's all they do is they just rehash other people's stories. They don't even, there's a lot of them don't even write their own stuff at all. It's just all contributed stuff, or they just get the marketing blurbs from somewhere and they spin that. So,
And, you know, and we've talked about that on here before because they've started, I mean, like you said, they actually have like FAEs writing that stuff. And it's like, come on. But I know what the response is going to be already too. It's like, Chris, if you don't like it, don't read it. And,
or contribute, which is one of my things. If I see...
Oh, you mean write your own? I'm not contributing to them.
When I see people bitching about my blog, the first thing I go is, well, you go write your own. You go do your own video. You know, people say, oh, you could have said that in 5 minutes instead of 15 or 20 minutes. Well, freaking go and do it yourself, you know? It's like... Yeah, so I'm a big fan of, unless you're actually producing content yourself, you should... Zip it, you know. Don't complain about other people's content. But we are content producers, so we are allowed to bitch.
We get to bitch
about other people's content.
Yeah.
And although the thing is, I don't like to complain about other people's content as such, because any content production is good, in my opinion. You know, if you're producing content, then really, I'm not going to slag you off that much.
But what if you're just a funnel for other people's PRs? You know,
that's what most blogs are. That's what most a blog by its kind of its traditional definition. There's many definitions, but a traditional blog can be nothing more than just picking other people's content and putting it on your blog. Things Hack Gadgets, maybe, I think, might be a good example of that.
Like an aggregator.
They're an aggregator. They don't do much of their own. They occasionally might do something, I think. But,
comments on it, but, yeah, a lot of it is.
Exactly. They just pick up, which is fine, because then you get all your content in one place. You only have to look at the one blog, which is great. But they don't actually produce their own content, and that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's great.
But, but that's different because he's pulling in other original content. He's not pulling in press releases. I keep saying PRs. Yeah. He doesn't pull in press releases. Like, magazines are pulling in press releases because it's what they have available to them, and it makes money. I mean, I think I'd be a little naive of us to think that there's any kind of, you know, backroom handshaking going on that, you're going to push our press release this month? Of course we will. You know, like, you're an advertiser.
Because that's what they do. That's what these magazines mostly do, really, is push other people's content. And granted, there's a lot of people out there who want to read all that stuff. They will just, you know, browse through and go, check out the new products. Because before the internet, this is how you found out about new products.
Well, that's a good point.
And stuff like that. You would read your electronics design magazine. You wouldn't read it for the articles. You'd read it for the ads.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not kidding. Before you know, you would flick through it. Oh, look at the new chip from Maxim
Shiny.
National or something like that. It's just, it was great. And they take out full page ads for these new chips that came out. And it was great. And that's how you got your information and kept up to date. But now with the internet, it's just,
That's true. And we've talked about that last week. We talked about, or 2 weeks ago with Twitter, right? I mean, that's kind of what has come down. Some people like that about Twitter that, like Linear Tech or National or TI or someone is pushing actual just press releases. And maybe it's just cut out the middleman kind of thing. Maybe that's the problem with the magazine industry these days, you know?
I'd like to see their sales figures and their surveys and stuff like that to whether or not they're, you know, dropping in number of sales and readership and things like that. But, of course, I've mentioned before that they love to fudge those numbers. So, yes, there'll be a lot of spin there. And this is annoying. EDN are one of the most annoying websites I've ever visited. You go there, you click on the damn link, they pop up with this full-page ad, right? And then, you know, if you either have to wait like 20 seconds for it to go through or you got to click to shut it down. And then I'm just exiting from the page. I'm actually on EDN's Hot 100 page. And then I try to shut it down. And then it pops up with the window, your feedback is important to us. Would you be willing to give a short 1 minute feedback? Yes or no? How about piss off? Where's the piss off button?
Yeah, God. I like that.
Anyway, I'm annoyed. Sorry, I was shouting in the mic. I hope I didn't peak there. I don't want to distort. EDN. There's nothing more annoying than EDN websites. Yeah, seriously.
Those full-page ads, they're just unacceptable. It's going to be again. You know, if you don't like it, we can just not go there anymore, which is, I mean, unfortunately, that's gonna be the eventual goal thing for me. You know, I've already shut down all my paper magazines. I don't get those anymore.
Right.
I'm not reading their stuff regularly. I mean, I forgot where I even got linked through to there, so.
Still like EDN in that they are a good aggregator of content. If you want the latest, you know, products that come out, even if they are these stupid marketing blurbs, then it's not a bad place to go for that. But then you've got to put up with all this advertising. So they're just an advertiser's dream, they are, in terms of number of impressions and stuff like that.
Oh,
Jones's diminishing blog law kicks in there, so it's all bullshit. Yeah.
You know, an interesting thing about the number of readers and stuff like that. So that piece you mentioned about the Leo Laporte thing, they actually talk about in that. So it's a New York Times article on Leo Laporte, and if people don't know who that is, he is a radio personality or podcast personality. He runs This Week in Tech or twit.tv, and basically I forget what the channel was before it got shut down, but it was like a cable channel back in the 90s and then into the 2000s, and then it got shut down. And then he was kind of doing his thing and doing a show here and there, and he was actually
shut down on purpose? Somebody actually tried to shut him up, or?
No, not him. So he was a host on a show on a network. Wow.
Oh, right.
That doesn't sound very vague, Chris. I don't remember what the network was, though. Basically, that network got shut down because people weren't watching it and the bubble crashed and all that. It was a technology channel, though, and it was a cable channel.
Interesting.
Then, basically, in 2005, he started a podcast called This Week in Tech, and that thing just kind of ended up exploding into what it is today. And if people don't know about it today, they have like 350,000 subscribers or listeners, like active listeners, and they're all, you know, techies, and they have like live chats. I mean, like the kind of setup they have is very enviable, and we'd love to be able to have that here if we could possibly get any kind of their quality when the people call in from Skype is kind of shaky, but they also have a huge studio out in California. So that's how they can do it.
And their audience is only 350 times bigger than the Amp Hour. I call that shooting distance. That's
all right.
Where,
I like it. I like that.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're growing too. I mean, so that's what this article is about. And basically, they have such a targeted audience, though, because we were just talking about audience. They get like $40 for every 1,000 listeners. So, you know, in terms of advertising, so the way advertising works is it's per 1,000 listeners or viewers or whatever. They get $40, where through traditional media, you'll get $15.
How did you find out those figures?
It's in the article.
Oh, it's in the article.
Dave. It's in the article, Dave. RTFA, Dave.
All right.
But yeah, it's a great article. And, you know, like, their shows, I mean, like, they have a lot of different shows, too. And if you've never checked them out, they're very well produced, very, very good content. And, but yeah, they're getting a lot more attention now, and they're going to keep growing. Hopefully, we'll keep growing. I just thought it was interesting from the perspective of, like, you know, people have been talking about targeted media for so long, you know, like, oh, radio's dead and podcasts are the future. And it's like, yeah, well, sort of. But we're kind of just starting to approach balancing points of radio and people in the car and just availability. You know, like, my phone can get this stuff.
Oh, of course.
They have their own app and everything, too, so.
Excellent. Well, so they're pulling in $4 or $5 million a year just for that This Week in Tech show.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Crikey.
And they're one of those shows that's more like, so we talk about electronics on this show. They talk more about the higher level, like Apple is doing this. And they actually have then different shows that are just about Apple or just about Google. So very tech-centric, but not necessarily down into the device-level stuff. Or the electronics level. They get into that once in a while, and some of their guests do too. But, you know, it's still really interesting if you're like a handset junkie, or you like Apple products, a lot of that stuff, you know, and that consumer level stuff, there's a lot of money in it, you know, a lot of interest in it.
Well, that's where the big advertising money comes in, because those companies fall over themselves to advertise on shows like that. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, they pay the big dollars, whereas a niche electronics show like this, you know, how much are HP going to, Agilent going to pay us to advertise directly on the show?
I'm not holding out.
We did this for fun, folks. Here's a word from our sponsor, Agilent.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, right. And actually, I've listened to, and they like a Ford is a huge, huge advertiser on that show. So, and they get big money. So,
right. $5 million a year.
Yeah. Podcasting is obviously, you know, our listeners. Thank you. Thank you for listening. We love you.
Absolutely. We're obviously in the right business. We just, not doing enough business yet. That's,
yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. We enjoy it, so that's all that matters.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't get 1 cent of advertising revenue yet for the Amp Hour, if anyone's wondering.
Nope.
No.
Pro bono.
No. We're up. Yep. We're just building up an audience here.
Yeah.
And then when we get to 300,000, then we're going to hammer it.
Yeah. So speaking of not getting a cent, I wanted to give a shout out. I forgot to do it at the beginning of the show. So John Oxer of Freetronics. I don't know.
Hey, John.
Oh,
he's a fellow Aussie.
Yeah, and he listens to the show too. So that thank you for listening.
And he's going to be he's going to be in Carl's Australian Electronics Doco too. So
we'll be able to see an update on that. Yeah.
Yep.
Basically, though, he's the one that put together shieldlist.org, and if people don't know about that, it's a list of all the available Arduino shields that are out there, just all in one place. You know what they can do, their pin layout. Really great resource. Not only that, though, he has been sending out a free Arduino board to anyone. I think it's to anyone who points them to a new shield. And he's just been giving these away.
Just points him to a shield. Wow.
I believe so. It might be the people who actually produce the shields, but that doesn't make sense to me because right. I think that they're the, you know, they're making their own shields. They probably already have a bunch of Arduinos. But
I would suspect so.
So, yeah, he sends them his own version of the Arduino esque layout. Obviously, it's not an official Arduino because that's a brand name, but his is the 2010, and I just think that's really awesome. I mean, he's really dedicated to the site, and you know, he's given all these boards away for free. So if you've never checked out Freetronics, go check it out. It's a great site, and he's got some cool products. So
excellent, way to go, John.
Yeah, and like Dave said, we're not sponsored, so he didn't make me say that.
No, exactly.
Right. Unless there's some kind of like weird Aussie, you know, like brotherhood that I don't know about, you know.
No, afraid there's not. Well, yeah, us Aussies love each other. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because we're so overwhelmed by the, you know, everyone else in the industry. You know, there's so many Yanks out there that, oh, fellow Aussie, great.
Yeah, I know, right? You know? Yeah, it's like the contrarian, not the contrarian, but the, yeah, you got to band together, stay strong.
And we'll even count you New Zealanders.
Oh, wow. That is
Sorry,
generous.
That was a bad New Zealand accent there.
Is that how they say it?
New Zealand.
New Zealand?
Huh. And six is sucks. Sucks.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. So everything in New Zealand sucks. You know, because it's sucks. Fish and chops.
Oh.
Anyway, sorry, I've done that before. I won't do it.
Yeah, interland mass wars.
Dear Eddie. Very bad impression. Anyway, we love New Zealanders.
Yeah. So what else do you want to talk about here? We got a couple choices and not too much time.
Got about 20 minutes left. 18 minutes. Let's go.
Yeah. So how about talking about the future? You want to talk about the future?
Oh, go for it. I love talking about the future.
So IBM, yesterday, I believe, they released an article. They unveiled their official next five and five, basically a list of innovations they think that are going to be really big, that are going to change the world in the next 5 years. And there's five of them, so five and five. Some of them I'm not so sure about. I don't know if you get a chance to look at these at all.
I've seen them. I don't know. Number one, you'll beam up your friends in 3D.
Yeah, how long they've been saying that?
I know. In 5 years? Come on.
Well, not even that, but like who cares? Like, what is the point? I don't get it. They've been talking about video phones for years.
Yeah, but they're talking about 3D holograms here, and they're not far off, so... I think maybe 10 years is a more realistic time frame. They're probably right in terms of experimental technology, but not a consumer device. You know, you're talking about the Microsoft Kinect and stuff like that that gets your 3D gesture interface. Yeah. But, but 3D why? Holographic projection just right there in front of you. Why?
I mean, like, you're not, like, running away from the stormtroopers or anything, right? I mean, like...
No, why? I think it would be a big deal because you'd be able to see your object in 3D right in front of you, your case, your new electronics gizmo product right in front of you before you hit the button on your 3D printer to actually make it. So you'll be able to see it there right in front, and you'll be able to spin it around, rotate it, and...
You're talking more about from a user interface.
Product design, yeah.
Okay, because they're talking about like communicating with people, like help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope, kind of.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You know that's what they're talking about here.
Yeah.
So you know I don't know. Okay, I'll give you, because we've talked about that on here before, about like looking at CAD designs and 3D kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff is awesome. You're right about that. Seeing that in 3D, it's like, or like in Iron Man when he does the exploded view. Like, exploded views are great, but, you know, they're hard to maneuver, right? That kind of hologram would be spectacular.
It would be. But it's technically very difficult. And I've seen these ones where you see a hologram right in front of you, but it's typically got to sit inside a box. So I think we're a long way away from the R2-D2, you know, with the projected thing and boom, there it is in front of you. You know, it's just out of thin air. You know, that's incredibly difficult to do. I don't even know if it's physically possible to do that. You've got to have some device or some cube which the... you know, 3D image appears inside. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
But to use it to talk to your friends, why do you need 3D for that?
I mean,
people are barely getting into video conferencing now. You know, video phones and all that sort of stuff. We're barely coming to concept with that and getting to grips with that. They want to throw 3D in there. I would rather see video than 3D. If I'm talking to someone, I'd rather see a full-color video of them, a 2D version, than some 3D, you know, I presume it's not going to be color and it's not going to be, you know, rendered nicely and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know. Ugh.
I don't want to see that. I don't want to see you while I'm talking to you, Dave. Come on.
Right.
honestly, I don't want that either. I want to be able to do stuff if I'm talking, like, it. Like, what if you're talking to someone on the phone? They're like, are you listening? You're not looking at me.
Right, yeah, I know.
You know, like, I know there's a lot of human emotion that gets transferred through the, like, facial expressions and stuff, but
yeah,
what if you're mad at someone? I don't know.
you don't hit the 3D or the video button. You go, regular phone call, please.
I'm pissed. Please, audio. Yeah. Well, other ones on here are batteries will breathe air, and I've read about this before. Basically, using metal oxides to generate energy. I believe not oxides themselves, but basically have actual chemical reactions between air and metal in order to create energy. I'm not sure the actual chemical reaction though.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not big in the chemistry side of things there, but yeah, I don't know. You can get them. I think you can actually buy them now that do various things, but the power output is very small. Right. You know,
I think saying battery and technology in general, that needs to keep going because lead acids run out of room, lithium ions run out of room. They're still not horrible options, but.
All of these polymers are coming along great guns. So, all sorts of various battery technologies. So, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that, batteries will be, you know, much better in the future. And you can get these tiny fuel cells where you put a little tiny, a little micro machine fuel cell motor. You put a tiny drop of fuel in there and it's a little micro machine and it generates, because there's a lot of energy stored inside oil or something like that. So you can put a little drop of, oil in there and a little machine goes away and generates power, So they're new types of batteries. Even when I was working on that sort of stuff, 5-6 years ago, we were contemplating using something like that. I think you could actually buy them at the time. These little cells for, fuel cells. And we were going to use those, but they didn't meet the requirements somehow. But yeah, there's many battery technologies out there, not just your traditional, you know, ones, but all sorts of things. So
yeah, it's just a matter of what takes hold, when it gets like the critical mass enough to get the cost down, like the economies of scale and everything. So
well, and then there'll be different types for different applications as well. There won't be one universal battery that will solve all the world's problems, I don't think. There'll be many different types, just as there are now.
Anytime someone's telling you there's one thing that'll solve all the world's problems, they're probably lying to you. You're probably reading a press release.
Exactly. The marketing blurb instead of the real world. Because, you know, if you think that one of these cells will power a cordless drill that requires hundreds of amps of surge current, you know, you're probably kidding yourself. Whereas it might be great for powering your mobile phone or, you know, or powering a watch or something like that, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's many different requirements. As I said, like a good extreme is a power drill and a watch. You know, if you look at how much power just a little, you know, just a tiny little LCD watch needs, right? It's trivial. It's tiny. Or your next step up, you know, might be your mobile phone or something like that requires more. And then you've got these appliances like drills that require hundreds of amps of surge current. Yeah. You know, massive. And the battery has to have a low enough ESR to cater for that. So, yeah.
Mm.
No one shoe to fit them all there, I'm afraid.
No.
What's next in the list?
Sensors, you know, another big... They didn't say it like that. They said you don't need to be a scientist to save the world. Okay. Yeah, but what you're really talking about is the Internet of Things and the sensor networks.
Oh, yes. God, no, not Internet of Things. Oh, I hate it's that. Back. Oh, no. Internet
you know what I think
things.
About when I think about that? I think about a refrigerator with a web app on it. I think, God, why does anybody... that's been beaten to death. I won't even talk about it. But, you know, that's what my mind jumps to when I think of sensors. Obviously, there's a lot wider reaching implications, you know. Human sensors for monitoring health conditions, that's a big deal, right? You know, environmental sensors, just micro power sensors, all that kind of stuff that's... They're maybe not calling it the Internet of Things because that is stupid, but in terms of embedded systems and embedded sensors, I agree with that. That's a good one. I mean, that is... We're already seeing that.
Why don't you want an internet appliance on your fridge? I think that'd be great. It'd be handy.
Because I have an internet appliance in my fridge. I have an internet appliance in my pocket. I have one in my bedroom. I have one in my living room. I am set. Thank you very much. And also the one in my pocket goes everywhere.
You can never have enough. No, you can never have enough. No, I think these internet appliances, you know, everything, because now for $50, right, you can buy one of these internet chumby style, you know, things with an LCD touchscreen and a Wi-Fi interface. So you'll have, and in, you know, so it's almost... So if you can buy that retail for $50, imagine how much the cost is. You know, what is it, $10-$15 or something like that in volume to build a touchscreen internet interface into something?
Yeah.
It's only going to get cheaper. So,
well, I don't discard the fact that it'll happen. I'm just saying I don't want it because when it breaks, I don't want to try and fix it, you know? And if it, you know, they're going to tie it into like, oh, well, now your fridge doesn't work because it can't talk to the internet.
Right.
Screw you guys. I just want to eat an apple out of my fridge. Come on.
Right. But you won't go, well, you can just ignore it. The fridge will still work and your internet appliance will stop working long before your touchscreen will stop working long before your fridge will die. I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it will.
I don't know. Anyway.
Number four was your commute will be personalized. This one's, I don't know. I think, you know, personalized driving or computerized driving is important. I'd love to read a book on the way to work, but I think we got a long way to go,
public
at least
transport.
In the U.S. What's that?
It's called public transport.
Yeah, right? You know? Not in the U.S., buddy. I live in the burbs.
No, you got to... I learned that
you?
The hard way. Oh.
Yeah. You,
first time
you said
I turned up to the
drive.
US and I realized that, what? You want to take a bus somewhere? Huh? Rent a car. So you turn up to the airport and there's a huge, massive car park just dedicated to rental cars.
That's a huge industry.
You're just expected to drive somewhere, you know? It's just remarkable.
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
Yeah,
but
it is.
That'd be good for car crashes, blah blah blah. I think there would be a ton of, at least in the U.S., I can guarantee there would be a ton of pushback from a bunch of, you know, don't take away my car, that's my freedom.
I like to spin that one around. Actually, I reckon the commute will die out because
that's
people won't have to go to work. Why
especially
can't
with
you
your
telecommute?
3D hologram. Yeah.
Exactly. With your 3D hologram, you can be in the meeting. You know, here, right. You know, you can fall asleep. Your 3D hologram falling asleep in the meeting. You know, bingo, playing Wankward bingo in the meeting. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be great if, and then like you program in someone that's actually paying attention while you're off, you know, shooting hoops outside or something.
You can have a recorded version of you just going, "Yep,
I agree. Like your idea. You know, that's great." Yeah. Oh, what about the TPS report?
Yeah, exactly. Throwing in very Dilbert-like lines into there. Yeah, that'd be awesome. It'd be awesome if you could select one of the Dilbert characters to appear as, you like an avatar, in the meeting. Yeah. Wally, you know, you can have Wally with his coffee mug and turns up to the meeting.
Awesome. Oh,
that's my ideal future. That'd be great.
Scott Adams needs to get on that licensing agreement stat.
Oh, for sure. I reckon IBM are probably missed the point on that one. I think the point is telecommuting, not commuting. Anyway, last one. Number five,
computer. Data centers will basically dumping waste heat into energy production instead of just dumping in the atmosphere. So that's a smaller one, I think.
It's tiny. Yeah.
Yeah, but they've been doing research. I mean, I don't want to discount this stuff because they've been doing. They've been doing research on this stuff. So IBM, no hard feelings here. I think the thing that I don't like about this list is it. I mean, it's very tech centric, but it completely. Leaves out the biological side of things. So I think that's still the biggest growth in terms of everything, like biological sensors, computer neural interface stuff. I think that's where the huge big things are that people don't see yet.
It depends on what stuff you're talking about. I mean, each list has to have a focus, I guess. And, you know, there's so many wide range. How do you pick a top five for the future? It's just crazy.
I think the real thing is if I'm not allowed to bitch, I have to go make my own top five list.
Right.
Like we talked about before, right?
Absolutely. Just do it. Don't bitch about other people's content. Yep.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
But I liked it. I thought it was a cool list. So.
Yeah. Sorry to tell you, there's no mention of your Maker chip machine on there.
You shut your mouth, Dave. That's going to happen.
That's going to happen, right.
Yeah. Just not in 5 years.
Right. 5 years. Oh, he's called it.
Yeah. Okay. No, I said not in 5 years. Oh, see, now I peaked right. on this. Sorry if that just distorted there. Dave makes me angry with that stuff.
Because you lost, dude. You got owned on that. You lost severely. Just admit it. Come on.
Yeah. Maybe someday. Actually, another one that I wanted to mention real quick, too. This isn't on the list, but I saw it the other day, and it's kind of very future techy. Basically, they did a couple weeks ago, they had an article in Electronics Weekly about the atomic level storage. And basically, they've been spinning protons and neutrons. They don't actually spin the electrons. They spin the nucleus atoms. And they did it. And I just wanted to mention, though, because it's so, they did it for like 140 milliseconds or something like that. Nanoseconds, I believe. Very short amount of time, but this is a very big thing. And the way they did it, though, they needed to do it at terahertz frequencies. They needed an 8.5 Tesla magnetic field. They had to get it down near 0 degrees Kelvin. And even after all that, there was still like only a couple hundred nanoseconds or something like that. So I'll post the link to that. But they're getting there, but for more of a scientific than a practical standpoint.
So. Sounds just like the chip maker machine. Ka-ching. Oh, there we go. Hey.
Ouch. You know, that's
ouch.
Flash. I think Flash started this way though too. Not talking about the chip machine, but the atomic level storage. You know, Flash started like that too, where they were just getting used to it, and they had to figure out different mechanisms. So
yeah, well, Flash kind of came out of nowhere. I think it was kind of like they really didn't expect it to be like. I think there was lots of more mature, viable options out there, and all of a sudden they didn't sort of get into production, but Flash did, and all of a sudden, wham! You know, Flash came out of nowhere and overtook the market because they actually had physical chips available you could buy in the end, and I think that's what won out.
I'm reading about that actually right now. So John Oxer and I saw a couple other people talk about it too. It's called The Innovator's Dilemma, and that's actually a book I'm reading right now. They talk about that and how none of the hard drive makers got into Flash because they just didn't see it coming. It was a disruptive technology. So very, very cool book so far. If people are out there are interested in that kind of thing, it's about like the entire process of, you know, how do you see stuff coming like this future list we just talked about, people, you know, Dave or I or this IBM people, they guess right now, but or even like the Ray Kurzweils of the world, right? We're guessing, oh, yeah. But there's no way to know. I mean, who's going to know?
Nobody
right?
gets it right. Okay, there's right. Yeah. If they did, they would write a book, and here's the Holy Grail, and you know,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's no. Right. You've
and
just
whoever
gotta...
did guess right, they get to say at the end, oh ha ha ha, I told you. But it's like, yeah, but you could have said anything. You could say tomorrow there's flying unicorns, you know?
Exactly. And, yeah. and you're just one of a million people who said something. Your one just happened to be lucky. You just happened to luck out and get it right, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And as if poor old Moore, right? Poor right, old Gordon right. Moore, Moore's Law, right? He was probably lucky, okay?
That it, well, he that was very smart, out. Too.
Well, he was very smart, of course. Yeah, but, yeah. you know, I think...
Well, they did revise it. They revised
even if you
it.
Ask, well, of course, even if you ask him, I think you'll say, yeah, I was very lucky. You know, I can't believe it lasted for as long as it did.
Right.
Or it's still
and actually,
going. So,
one last thing. That actually works out really well, because the last thing I wanted to mention about this, so with the atomic level storage, so basically yep. they're saying a single atom can store a bit, right?
Yep.
And so there is this research I heard about a while back. It was a guy that used to teach at my alma mater, and he did a calculation based on Moore's Law. It has a lifetime of 600 years. Beyond that... basically, every atom in the near light universe will be consumed by data. So the way that works, this is a weird calculation, but basically the way it works is every atom is storing a zero or a one, right?
Yeah.
Every atom within the amount of distance it takes to beam data back past the speed of light's event horizon,
yeah.
all of that mass can only store so much data. And we're going to run out of it in 600 years.
Oh, I think it's bullshit, really.
No, it's true.
I mean, yeah, but that calculation can't be right. There's something that they're not factoring in.
Well,
clearly.
Of course, no, yeah, you're right. There's something that they're not factoring in. But basically, that's based on the exponential growth we see today, right?
Oh, yeah, but exponential growth never sustains itself. I mean, it's
right,
that's
exactly.
Just,
so that's probably the thing that's really going to limit it. But if we did, 600 years from now, we would run out of things to store data in. Isn't that amazing? I think that's such a cool figure. I think that's so
cool.
Yeah,
it's cool science fiction-y kind of stuff. Yeah,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
more of
well,
a
yeah.
practical guy.
Right, well, as a disclaimer, this guy also wrote the Science of Star Trek, I believe it was.
Right,
so that was his
okay,
book,
there
so.
You go. Yeah.
So, yeah.
They're still trying to match the human mind. You know, there was an article in this month's IEEE, mag uh-huh. about you know
yeah, yeah.
about technology to mimic the human mind and all that sort
right,
of stuff
right.
so
yeah
yeah they've been saying that one for 50 years haven't they so you know.
Oh they'll keep saying it don't
and
worry about
they'll
that.
Keep revising the targets because you know back 40-50 years ago they said oh if a computer could play chess that is the definition of it's as smart as the human mind
yeah.
you know, and their intelligence and if it can pass the Turing test and all sorts of things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It just keeps going and they keep revising. And then they go, no, we're actually still much smarter, you know, so,
right.
than we think.
Right, right.
What can you do?
Well, we could write another law about it.
Well, yeah.
Instead of Moore's Law, we can call it the amp hour law.
No, nope. It needs a catchier name than that.
No, yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
The
it's not
law.
Catchy enough. Anyway, I think our amp hour's up.
Oh, yeah. By a bit.
By no pun intended.
Right.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yes, we will talk to you next week.
In the new year. Well, yes, it'll be the new year.
Oh, yeah. Happy
2011.
New
year. Holy
oh,
crap.
Oh, man, we made it. One more year left, right?
Ah. And then we've only got until what is it 2012 until the world blows up. So we better get that advertising revenue in now. Well, we've still got a chance.
Tell your friends, make everybody listen in the new year. Make it a make it a New Year's resolution to tell your friend about the amp hour.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye.